Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 9:44 p.m. and that is in Japan time. And today is Thursday, the 5th of April. Well, I'm recording a little early because I'm going to be catching a very early flight tomorrow, but I will be back in Los Angeles in the early afternoon. So I do anticipate being able to record the Friday big picture long term audio in a good time tomorrow, and also to I'll be writing I think an account of my experiences in Japan over the last 10 days, which hopefully will be somewhat illustrative of what we might perhaps give some understanding of what exactly is the condition of the market here. But I thought that I would kick off by looking at Bitcoin. I haven't talked about Bitcoin in a while, and it's been trending lower for most of the last month, and it's down now into the mid 6,000s, and back approximating the lows that we saw back in early February. But more to the point is that when we got back to this level previously, we had a really rather impressive bounce, and there's been scant evidence of that just yet. The reality is that the Bitcoin market crashed, and Bitcoin represents the epicenter of risk. It is by far the largest of the cryptocurrencies, and when we think about it in those terms, it was also where the majority of the speculation was in. Now, obviously, there was a lot of speculation in the altcoins as well, but they're considerably smaller, and therefore they didn't have quite the same degree of leverage or intensity. And of course, because often what people have to do in order to buy these other coins is either to invest in Bitcoin or Ethereum, then the knock-on effect has been that with Bitcoin falling, then it pushed all or pulled all the rest of the other coins down with them. However, there is a rather important difference here, and it is that Bitcoin has got a very limited supply, and it is still a proof of work organism, and very highly dependent on mining, and it is being superseded very quickly by competing technologies. One is proof of stake, and Ethereum is quickly moving on to that platform and anticipates to have that completed by the end of the year. Then, in addition to that, you have DAC platforms, which are even faster again. In fact, they approximate the speed of either Visa or MasterCard in terms of processing. And there's a good chance that they represent the future of the cryptocurrency market. That's why I'm on the record as comparing Bitcoin to Netscape. It was the clear leader in the early stages, but then largely disappeared and was completely superseded, for example, by Google and Chrome, rather than having to pay for a browser. We now have them for free. And then I think that that is perhaps also the way that we're going to see the cryptocurrency sector evolve, that there are some unique characteristics to the blockchain that are attractive to those that want to revolutionize the financial sector in particular, and are also record keeping, and they will continue to push for the implementation of these kinds of technologies. We're just not at a one size fits all just yet. I think that this is the stage that we could compare. The cryptocurrency market at the moment is still very much dial up, and we're just not at the broadband sector just yet. It isn't really until we get a catch all that we're going to have very rapid implementation of blockchain type technologies. So when we think about it in those terms, Bitcoin has crashed, and following a crash, generally what we get is a very lengthy period of ranging. And Bitcoin is coming back towards this $5,000 level, and 5,000 has been an area of support at least twice before. So it would also represent a significant 75% retracement from the peak. So we could see that act as a potential support level, but there's no evidence of that just yet. And therefore, I think that it is probably going to be in other coins where we see relative strength starting to develop, and that's probably where we're going to have evidence of leadership in the next stage of this particular cycle? Well, of course, gold has been the go-to asset for people that are worried about the devaluation that of forces that governments put on currency, and as a store of value. Well, gold continues to range, and following that rather large inverted hammer yesterday, then it is in somewhat negative territory in here today, but it's still well within this range that's been evident now for the last couple of months. I think over the medium term, this continues to look like a saucering pattern under accumulation, and a sustained move below the trend mean would really be required to question that we aren't going to see additional upside here. Then, when we look at, for example, the gold shares, and the gold shares have been in a very tight range for much of the last 15 months, and they're right at the lower side of that range now, and they were in mildly negative territory so far today. Well, it's going to need a clear upward dynamic, and probably that would be associated with a return to performance by gold. The gold shares are under pressure because they have declining. Or I guess they have the I'm actually lost for words. The intensity of the ore that they are finding is declining. So therefore, their potential to massively increase supply for higher prices is rather contained, and that is part of the reason why they are underperforming at the present stage. And of course, you also have the ETFs. And certainly, it is in ETFs that we have some evidence that that's where investors are starting to put their money once more. They are much preferring to simply bet on the gold price than to bet on the miners. And it is going to require gold to break higher in a rather dynamic fashion to really start to light a fire under the gold mining sector, despite the fact that it is relatively cheap relative to the gold price that we have right now. Then, when we look at crude oil prices, well, crude oil is a little bit weaker in here today, but so far this continues to look like a range, and it's above the $60 area. And what that suggests is that we can give higher lateral ranging the benefit of the doubt, so long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, which has increased up to about 62 and a quarter over the course of the last few weeks. There's a lot of supply becomes economic above $70, but there are plenty of geopolitical tensions that we could potentially worry about, not least with regard to Iranian supply. And realistically, what happens with North Korea doesn't have any bearing on oil, considering that it is neither a major producer nor consumer. But what happens with Iran obviously does have a rather significant impact on oil prices. And so does high yield bonds. A lot of the bonds that have been issued have been for the purpose of shale production. And if we see spreads starting to widen out, then that is going to put some of those operations under pressure. That could put additional upside pressure on the oil price. So we have to continue to keep an eye on these high yield spreads, which remain very much range bound. But what my purpose was simply to highlight that when they eventually break out, that there's probably going to be a number of unintended consequences, and that the effects are probably going to be rather wide ranging, not least because an uptick, and most particularly an uptrend in high yield spreads, generally contributes to additional volatility on stock markets. Well, the S&P 500 is trading in positive territory on the futures, and it has bounced from the region of the trend mean. As long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, then I think people are probably going to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. What I think is also worth highlighting is that it is mid caps and small caps have been doing rather well relative to the large caps over the course of the last few months. And the Russell 2000 got right up to test that 1600 point level, and it has bounced again from the region of the trend mean, and it was in additional positive territory yesterday. It's the second section in Japan that has been a clear lead indicator for that market for years now. In fact, it was something that was a clear lead indicator back when Japan was breaking up back in 2002, 2003, when David and I first started working together. And it is still being is still re reasonably firm in the region of the trend mean at present. Then, when we look at the AIM 100 in the UK, well, we're presented with a relatively similar pattern here, that it really rallied very impressively following the Brexit vote back in 2016. We've had a loss of consistency over, well, I guess we've had a loss of momentum, more correctly, over the course of the last few months, and it is now back in the region of the trend mean. It was really quite overextended when it pulled back in February, and now we're starting to see support starting to come back in again. And of course, that 5,600 level was approximating the peak that we saw back in 2008. So we're back into the kind of area where it was trading at before the credit crisis. As long as it's holding the region of the trend mean, then I think most people are going to be reasonably sanguine about the potential for additional upside. But of course, what happens with Brexit and just how the UK is planning to have a relationship with the EU within the next 12 months is still very much open to question. The pound continues to hold this move above 114 to the euro, and as long as it is doing that, then this continues to look like a process of support building in the region of the trend mean. The pound has collapsed over the course of the last few years. We have had a significant rally in the middle of 2017, and then there has been this range which has had an upward bias for most of the last 7 or 8 months, and now it is trading above the trend mean. It's trading above 114, and this looks like a type 2 bottom with right-hand extension. We had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We've had this period of right-hand extension or ranging, and there is the realistic possibility that the pound could break on the upside versus the euro. And I think that that is not really a condition that many people are particularly prepared for, considering the depth of, I think, pessimism that is being expressed about the UK economy in a number of circles. But 10-year gilt yields are also back in the region of the trend mean. And that also represents the upper side of this range that was persisting all the way through 2017. So this is about where supply should start to be reasserted in the bond market. And of course, we know that the UK is probably closer to raising interest rates than any other major economy outside of the USA and Canada. And there is, I think, potential here for additional upside on the bonds. Then, when we look at what's going on in Australia, well, the ASX was in positive territory this morning, and it is, but it has got some work to do to really start to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, that it did go to a new low, and it is trading below the trend mean. It obviously has had encountered some resistance around this 6,000 level, and 6,000 was also an area of resistance back in 2015. But then, when we look at the much longer term scale, we ask ourselves some simple questions, and the first, of course, is, well, whether it is trending or ranging, and it's more or less ranging, and it's not particularly consistent either. There has certainly been a progression of higher reaction lows since 2016, but it has got a lot of work to do. Now, part of the reason that it is not, I think, let me do a better job of typing. And if we look at the ASX 300 Banks Index, well, I think we get part of the answer, because it's been trending lower now for a year. It bounced in here today, and it is oversold in the short term, but it has got some work to do. It really does need to put in more than a short-term bounce. It needs to push back above the trend mean, which, is the better part of 500 points away from where the price is today. So it's got a bit of a ways to go before it can really start to do that. And the banks are rather heavily exposed to the property market. Meanwhile, the resources sector is right back in the region of the trend mean. And it was in negative territory in here today, and it is being weighed on by these fears about protectionism. But nonetheless, as long as it's holding the region of the trend mean, then this remains a broadly bullish environment, and the potential for a bounce remains intact. So, again, I do apologize for recording the audio somewhat earlier, but I think that I've got. I will certainly be back in action next week, and I'm very much looking forward, in fact, to heading down to Australia to conduct the chart seminar. It's been a while since I've been there, and I think I'm really looking forward to my going back to my old stomping ground in Melbourne. And with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.